Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, depending on where you are in the world and what time it is when you're tuning in. This is Perrin Desports, and I'm your host for the Group Practice Accelerator podcast from Polaris Healthcare Partners. If you're an entrepreneurial dentist or physician, and you're interested in building a successful group practice, you found your primary resource for some of the industry's best business education. My partner, DeWalker Sinha, and I have decades of experience helping people just like you launch, scale, and ultimately exit successful group practices. In short, we create clarity, confidence, and results. Well, welcome everybody to yet another episode of the Group Practice Accelerator podcast. I think you're going to be excited about this one. That's right. I'm bringing my partner, DeWalker Sinha, back behind the microphone. We haven't heard from him in a little while. And oddly enough, we're going to spend some time talking about, of all things, debt financing. This has appeared on our radar with alarming regularity recently, and there are a handful of things that we want to share as it relates to capital markets in general. I think you're going to get a lot out of this, so get your pad and pen ready. You know it'll be a note-taking episode, and brew another wonderful cup of that meal of coffee. The Group Practice Accelerator podcast is on the air. Welcome, everybody, once again to the Group Practice Accelerator podcast. I am your host, Perrin Desports. Thanks for a little bit of time once again and joining me on the show. And joining me on the show is my partner, DeWalker Sinha. It's been a little while, DeWalker, since we've had you on the show. So welcome back, buddy. Good to have you.
Great to be on, and thank you, everyone, for joining us today. Look forward to the podcast.
I can tell by the thrill in your voice, DeWalker, that you have been looking forward to this for weeks, if not longer. But when we start talking debt, there's no better person to bring on board than you, obviously, with your background in lending. And I'm going to preface this by saying we've seen a recent trend with some of our current clients and former clients, several trends actually, that we want to dig into in these podcasts, because it's kind of an unusual market with rates where they are. That seems to be the thing that, you know, the Fed talks about the most and that everybody's focused on, and the reluctance to take on additional debt right now because the cost of it is so high. Maybe not, oddly enough, there are a number of people who are looking for credit facilities from the tune of, you know, $5 million on the low end to the tune of what might be $80 to $100 million on the top end. So we see them all up and down the chain of group practices and DSOs. Before we dig into that, and that might even be a subsequent podcast, today I think we need to take a hard look at what we're going to call compliance and loan covenants. With the rise in rates and the constricting credit box, banks are a lot more diligent, is probably not the right word, but they pay a lot more attention to covenant compliance. And this has crept up in the past on random occasions with some of our clients, but it seems to be hitting the radar a lot more frequently now, given the overall lending rate environment. So, DeWalker, let's start today's discussion with one of the most boring topics possible, but yet it's of paramount importance to our target client base, and that is just digging into some compliance issues and loan covenants in general. Do you want to share with the audience some of the conversations you've been involved in recently and give a little color commentary to it?
Sure. Yes, I think when we think about loan covenants, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's not the most exciting topic. It's like looking at your operating agreement for your business, and you know, it might be 10 pages, might be 30 pages. So I think a lot of people don't look at them. But what I'll try to do is kind of compartmentalize them into the different buckets of lending. Not to say that these covenants are the only covenants, but these tend to be the general covenants out there. And they change from lending institution to lending institutions, and they change based on market conditions. So there's a lot of, it's a very fluid credit structure. And I think we've talked about that in our previous podcast. So I think last year we talked about Q1, Q2 being the turn of the market. I think we start looking at the CPI, you know, we're sub 3% today, you know, hopefully headed out to sub 2.5%, which I think where the Fed's looking to move towards before indicating any further rate adjustments. So I do think the next 6 months or a year, you know, our listeners and audience members that are prepping their business for the next 6 months or a year, which is always what we talked about, I think we positioned well. So, you know, why are we getting a lot of calls on this? So they could be from our existing consulting clients, or could be from people just trying to evaluate what their process looks like. So different credit buckets. Look at sub 3 million in lending exposure, I'll put it at that way. Lending exposure is unique because that lending exposure, some institutions will look at that inclusive of real estate exposure. Some institutions will exclude the real estate exposure as a carve out and only look at operating debt or operating company debt, meaning your dental practice, your medical practice debt, not the real estate inclusive. So, but speaking in the theme of lending exposure, sub 3 million, they're going to be looking for quarterly company prepared financial statements. Some will look for CP prepared financial statements to have this is a higher level of surety of the financials out there. Annually filed tax returns, they typically want that within 30 to 60 days after filing. So if you're always filing for extensions, you provide the institution the extensions. And then if you're filing by September 15th, then they're due by October 15th or November 15th based on your loan documents. Other aspects of it are going to be the debt service coverage ratio, the fixed charge coverage ratio. And just to kind of put definitions around it, fixed charge coverage ratio is the business's ability to pay back the business debt, not your personal ability. And, you know, we're going to touch base a little bit on that because that is, they're both important. And as you go through the business operating income, you know, that's looked at as overall revenue coming in, your lease payments, your wage expenses going out the door. And then essentially what your net income is left within the business, there's going to be some EBITDA add backs within the business of interest depreciation, things like that, that you might have taken, any depending on institutions, some one-time add backs. And that's effectively your available cash flow to pay back the bank loan. Some institutions require a 1-1, which means, let's say your annual debt payments were $200,000, and a 1-1 would mean 200,000 times 1.1. That effectively means you have to have available cash flow of $220,000 to pay back the business debt. Now, what you may view or our audience members may view as available cash flow versus how a lender looks at available cash flow are two materially different things in most cases. So if you don't know how that's being looked at, contact us. We have a lot of bankers in-house. We can help you understand how that's looked at within your business, give you our guidance on what things we need to be thinking about. But that's fixed charge coverage ratio. Then we talk about global debt service coverage ratio. That is your ability to pay back all your obligations, business and personal. And in that aspect, a bank may look for a 1.25 to a 1.35. That means all the income coming to you as a principal owner, including distributions, your EBITDA plus your owner cash flow, essentially has to be able to pay back all business obligations, including the business loan outstanding, plus your personal obligations. And that's your mortgage, your car loan, your student loan debt, any personal obligations that you have guaranteed. If you have kids in college and you're guaranteeing their student loans, then that's inclusive in that calculation because you are a guarantor of that debt. So that's, I kind of segue, Perrin, a little bit on definitions, because as we build upon the different covenants that are out there, it's important to understand definitions. And if you do not have this down on the podcast, please, you know, call us and we're happy to walk you through and provide you guidance on how to look at this more detailed and personalize the situation for you. So that's under 3 million, right? The debt service coverage ratio, the CP prepared financial statements or company prepared financial statements, the annual tax returns. Banks will look for a personal financial statement. So annually they're due depending on the institution. So that's up to 3 million. And then once you go above 3 million, the fixed charge coverage ratio, the global debt service coverage ratio, they continue to evolve to a more risk standpoint. And then they start looking for potentially reviewed financial statements or gap-based reviews or cash-based reviewed financial statements, depending on the type of institution you're going to. And then typically above $10 million, you go to towards an audit. And audit's typically going to be on a gap-based financial statement. And GAAP stands for Generally Accepted Accounting Principle. And that's effectively stands for accrual financial statements that are audited or reviewed by the CPA or a third-party CPA. So those are important because in our other podcasts on sell side, we've talked about quality of earnings, and quality of earnings tend to be on an accrual-based or gap-based financials. So it's important to understand that some of these things are interconnected. So as you grow in your lending relationship, you change your financial reporting. As you change your financial reporting, in many ways, you're aligning with Polaris' core principles of when you're going to potentially go to market and allowing us to give you guidance on when that position is. But that's high-level compliance, high-level loan covenants. Each loan covenant is going to be different because we have to read the loan documents and understand them. We can have our general theories around it. And I think 80% of the time, Perrin, we're fairly close in our calculation. But there are some individual institutions that will have their way of calculating it versus how we may view it. So I think it's important to have that conversation with us. Let us look at it and provide you that guidance.
Yeah, so great insight. Obviously, you lived this world for the better part of two decades, and all of our clients and all of our audience, for that matter, are what we call doctor-founded and debt-funded groups. You know, they're entrepreneurs building multi-location groups, and they're using bank funds to do it. So the banking piece is of critical importance because that's the capital vehicle that everyone in our market chooses, and rightfully so, to create the group practice that, in the time frame that they desire. Whether or not they're going to sell it or operate it, that's a different conversation. But understanding how the bank looks at you from a lending relationship, a comprehensive lending relationship, is of critical importance. Now, while we're on the subject of compliance and loan covenants, I think you did a really good job of kind of setting the table, if you will, on what all that is. But, we've seen in our history, banks notify the borrower that they are that they have violated one of their covenants, that they're not in compliance with all of their covenant structure. Can we talk a little bit about what that exactly means to not be in compliance, and the jeopardy that it puts the business in, and kind of the ramifications for the borrower, the hoops they got to jump through to solve for it? What happens then if they get this wrong, or if they're not even aware of it and they don't keep enough cash on balance sheet, or whatever the covenant is that they violated? What happens then, and kind of take us through that scenario?
I'll kind of look at this from a proactive measure first, and then look at it from a reactive measure, because we get, we have processes for both. So from a proactive measure, started talking about earlier in the podcast of being able to forecast lending. And we've had other podcasts talking about ability to forecast lending or forecast your relationship with the lender. So we do that on our consulting side, and we have some clients in our full consulting and fractional COO. We monitor that information and can with high level of certainty be able to predict how a client's business performance and execution is going to be in line with getting lending, continued lending relationship. So I think that's very meaningful for people that are evaluating, okay, how do I achieve what is consulting, right? And what is going to be lending relationship? And I think the consulting side, you get the foundations of how to build ability to understand forward-looking lending relationships. And that's because, we do financial analysis on the business, operational analysis and financial analysis. So I think and then we have some clients that just do financial monitoring with us. I'll use that as a term. And that is just us. These are typically our consulting clients that have scaled down the relationship, that want to stay with us and help us, manage their business financially to make sure that they're in compliance with the loan covenants, that we're able to kind of help them think through high-level operations within the business and allow them to kind of make real-time decisions, within their business. So I think that those two aspects allow us to do more of a proactive engagement where we can make sure that that our client's not going to be in a non-compliance based on that. And for many institutions that we have a good relationship with, they even entrust us with doing the compliance certificates for the bank. So That's a pretty unique position to be in when the institution goes to Polaris and says, hey, you guys have been in this relationship. Here's our methodology. Can you guys work on this for us? Have the client execute it, and we can get that back on a quarterly basis. So that is it allows us to kind of be in line with the client in step. You know, then you kind of go into more of a potential non-compliance. And a potential non-compliance and a non-compliance is good reason to kind of think about it. Hey, how the business is operating? What are the financial best practices and operational practice we're using to manage the business or perform in the business? And, you know, so that could be in line with, okay, you know, we had a significant cash expenditure in a quarter. And that cash expenditure, because based on the calculation of the institution, we were going to be non-compliance in, you know, Q2 of 2024. And that sometimes is okay as long as you have the conversation with the institution and we're able to do that and say, hey, you know, in Q2 in parents' business, you know, we're going to, instead of taking out a loan for, you know, 4 3D x-ray machines and deploying $400,000 to $450,000 in debt, we're actually going to provide a cash payment for it. So we're not going to take on debt. That's going to reduce our cash position, but we're not taking on debt. And that's going to potentially cause us into non-compliance for that one quarter based on how your loan documents read. But we do anticipate in the Q3 for us to kind of go back up. And again, those kind of proactive conversations allow us to understand non-compliance, have a good dialogue with the institution of non-compliance, but and also allow the institution to understand what non-compliance is. Truly not non-compliance because it's somebody making good choices and not borrowing more debt. It's really the cash position somebody may have that they're spending or taking existing cash flow within the business to write cash, you know, for purchases within the business. And candidly, that creates equity for the shareholders to deploy versus taking on debt. So there's a balance to just paying cash for everything and borrowing for everything, and allowing us to be in that process to understand that allows us to kind of be proactive in it. Again, non-compliance or potential non-compliance, not a real issue, because I think those are the worlds we probably deal with a lot of our consulting clients. And then you kind of go into the non-compliance and then a default issue. And non-compliance, you know, really comes down to how is a bank looking at non-compliance? Is the business performing? Actually, we just have a bad methodology that we can negotiate with the institution to change the language of how the debt service coverage is being calculated. And sometimes the institutions are not flexible, or the credit officer is not flexible, and then we go into different institutions. So that allows us to kind of be, again, in a non-compliance position, understand if we can get a compliance position back in alignment, or concurrently start looking at additional lending sources so we can be proactive to prevent a default. So again, hopefully that's the, we kind of went from a proactive, forward-looking lending relationship to a potential non-compliance to a non-compliance ability to rewrite the loan documents, and then a potential default. And a potential default, again, I think it's important to understand the tone of the institution. When I was a banker, I was on the side of it of issuing default letters. And there's several tones that come into play. A tone might be, hey, you know, we've come to you for non-compliance, we've been non-compliance, we're unfortunately now in a default position. We want to work with you, and, you know, let's cure this and let's get back into good standing. We really want to be in a good standing with you. And I think a lot of institutions want to be there with their borrower. Nobody wants to have a default on their paper, you know, somewhat empathetic towards a lending position in that aspect. So I do feel that's how institutions look at it, or at least have a desire to look at it. And then another tone might be, hey, you know, we are in default. We're starting all of our remedies in a default process, and we're going to take aggressive actions. Both can have the same default letter. I think the tone matters on how that call goes, and understanding the steps you need to take. If it is a process of a potential default, then we, you know, understand ways to cure it with that institution, and concurrently look at new institutions. And we've done that in the past, you know, for clients last year coming out. You know, last year was a tough year economically in a macroeconomic condition. So we were able to help clients kind of come out of that position. We have several businesses right now that went into a cash flow crunch that were, you know, going into Q1 in a cash flow crunch. And then we were able to kind of restructure the business internally with the leadership team internally in systems and processes, and externally if it's a lending situation within that. So I think hopefully that kind of progresses from, hey, proactive, let's be ahead of all these conversations, to potential non-compliance, to non-compliance, to a default. And within default, there's like two different bifurcated, you know, angles you could go into to evaluate how to approach that. But I think, you know, I think it's really important. All these things are important as you kind of think about the next 12, 24 months of the growth of the business and stability of the business. Because you, again, we've talked about parent two things that are very meaningful to the operation and success of a business, and that's human capital, and then there's capital, and they both of those things have the word capital behind them. So I think any capital issues within the business, that's where we want to be involved in, and help you kind of, you know, right size the ship or make sure the ship's headed in the right direction.
Yeah, great overview and summary. And I love the way you broke it down there. I mean, I think it goes without saying that if you're going to build a group practice, you know, and you're going to, you know, if the desire is to acquire a practice every 3 or 4 years, then, you know, you're not going to be too worried about some of these issues. The vast majority of our clients are looking to buy or build an additional location about every year, and some two a year. And at that rapid rate, you cannot approach banking from a transactional mindset. It is truly a relationship. You have to understand how to manage that relationship. And the word that you used in several instances is being proactive about it. That free flow of communication, bidirectional communication with your lender, so that they are every bit a strategic partner, every bit as much as you know, your CPA, your attorney, Polaris, and others would be. They're truly that valuable. And it's important to be able to preserve that relationship and maintain the confidence of the lending institution. We would rather be involved with those conversations on a forward-looking basis when we have the time and the liberty to do so, versus getting the oh no call with a short timetable to pull a rabbit out of a hat, or pull the iron out of the fire, so to speak, and save the business. That's stress, and to a degree a level of duress that it is avoidable and usually unnecessary if we're involved early on. So for those in the audience that are thinking about the next phase of growth for their business, what their lending relationship looks like, it's really important to get eyes on that and to evaluate it when you're not under the gun, because then you can make better informed decisions without as much time pressure. And I think that's where you'd rather be versus the oh no call after you receive the letter, and that's very much reactionary, like you mentioned. DeWalker, this has been a tour de force, as it always is with you. We don't get you on the podcast too terribly often, but when we do, you absolutely deliver. And I think, you know, probably we're gonna pick up on a subsequent podcast about the state of lending, and we'll dig deeper into rates, cash flow, is existing low cost debt versus credit facilities maybe at a higher rate, you know, and talk some things along those lines that sort of picks up where this conversation leaves off. So I really appreciate you being on the show with me today, and all the insight that you give to our audience. It's truly valuable. Thanks for being with me today, my man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
You bet. And we will we'll have him on a subsequent episode, probably the next episode, actually. But for those still in the audience here, stick around. I'll be right back with some additional thoughts and to wrap up the show. And welcome back to the show, everybody. Thanks once again for joining me today. And I wanted to take a couple of quick seconds before we wrap up today's session to introduce to maybe a handful of y'all who don't already know the company iBailey. They're a top 20 accounting firm here in the United States. And most of you have probably met or heard Scott Aberman before. He's been on the show and he's obviously been at several of our conferences along with some of his cohorts. And once again, iBailey is going to be with us in Puerto Rico. Scott Aberman is going to be bringing one of his different cohorts, another Scott Thorne, to Puerto Rico. And we're going to be talking about enterprise accounting systems. And that, while that may sound self-evident and a little bit boring, there's a lot to this that is mission critical to your success and things for you to understand. A lot of you read your P&Ls religiously. You read them as if they're your scorecard or your report card. And what you're going to find is that the bigger the business is that you build and desire to build, things like budgeting, balance sheets, liquidity, being able to forecast accurately and certainly do it all within covenant compliance for your lender becomes mission critical. And the two Scotts are going to share all of that and a lot more with all of you. It's going to be a wonderful session wrapped around financial reporting. So first off, let me allow these two gentlemen to introduce themselves and iBailey to those who haven't met them or don't know about the company. Scott Aberman, you want to take the lead and just say hello to the audience and tee it up for the firm, and then we'll flip it to Scott Thorne.
Absolutely, Perrin. Thanks for the introduction to the firm. As you mentioned, we are a top 20 firm across the United States, and I'm located smack dab in the middle in Fort Collins, Colorado, about an hour north of Denver. So a beautiful place this time of year, actually, in February, 60 and sunny today. So we lucked out with the weather. I'm sure we'll get pounded with snow in March. So that's coming. Anyways, I'm a tax partner here within the firm, and I lead our group dental practice segment here within iBailey. And it is, as you know, a rapidly growing industry, just the way that healthcare consolidation has been going over the last few years, and even before that with specialty medical practices. So it's not something that's new and uncommon. We've been playing in this space for quite some time now. But we really enjoy the entrepreneurial doctors that we've been working with and just the way that their vision to grow the culture of their practices, the way they take care of the employees and the way they're creating new opportunities for their communities is just so exciting to see and be a part of. And so, you and I were talking previously, I know enough to be dangerous on the financial reporting side. But being really a tax specialist in-house here serving our groups, we saw an opportunity to bring in one of my colleagues who has served larger health systems before to really help scale and grow our dental practices that we've been serving in more of that CFO type capacity. Because I've been seeing challenges of, all right, we need some help interpreting and planning cash flow wise. Or let's look at forecasting into the next year. Or what's our five-year plan? Are we going to open a new practice? Do you have a budget for operatories? And how much do those build-outs cost? Most of these folks are just so successful that they keep on turning that same wheel and reopening practice and not really knowing what's going to go into that new operatory, not really knowing what's going to go into that new build-out. And so it's good to use numbers to support the plans for the future. And it makes it easier to really grow and scale when you have that plan in place. And so I'll go ahead and turn it over to Scott, and I'll let him kind of talk about what we've been doing over the last few years.
All right, thank you, Scott. Perrin, thank you for having me on the podcast today. A little bit about my background. As Scott mentioned, I've been in healthcare much longer than what you would expect from a guy that sounds as young as I do, right? but I've been in healthcare for over 20 years. Most of my experience is primarily in the larger healthcare settings, such as hospitals and physician practices. I have worked with independent practices. I worked with several dental clinics, dental practices as well. And so I do know the challenges and the space that everyone's facing, you know, whether it's a physician, say a dermatology practice or a dental practice, there's a lot of similarities with just the challenges that everyone has. So what we've been working with, what I've been working with Scott and our clients with iDaily is trying to help them address some of those challenges. A lot of what, you know, the practices focus on is EBITDA. Well, there's a little more to the practice than EBITDA and making sure you hit that target. As Scott alluded to, there's the more strategic piece of managing, I'll say, managing the balance sheet and managing your cash flows and making sure you're using your capital in the most effective manner as possible. And so one of the things that we've been working with some practices recently on is taking a holistic approach of a budgeting. So why do you want a budget for the year, you know, the upcoming year? And then what should you plan for? You know, so it's not just a budgeting on your income statement, your operational results, but it's also looking at what your capital needs are. Are you going to need to renovate your current space? Are you going to need to purchase or replace equipment that's getting older? You know, and so how do you plan for it? And then the third component to it, as I call the three-legged stool, is the cash forecasting. So how are you going to fund your capital purchases? How are you going to fund your operations? And so the three of them kind of meld together in a nice little strategic forecast or a strategic plan. We've also...
Go ahead. Sorry. Go right ahead, Scott. Keep.
Yep. I was just going to say, so we've also talked, started having conversations about benchmarking and how you can use benchmarks to help improve the performance of your operations and looking at even benchmarking within your own practice and your own locations and trying to identify who the best performers are and then steal shamelessly from those people or those offices and, you know, to really improve how you're working in the rest of the locations.
This is great stuff because I remember in my prior career working with Patterson as a general manager, we got a crash course in financial reporting from the CFO of the company, Steve Armstrong. And we learned very quickly about variance and comparable and reporting and line of sight as it relates to what they called management by exception, which is to those benchmarks like you mentioned. And it was a discipline that we had to learn early on, or else you weren't going to be able to run the business that you were entrusted with which you were entrusted. And I think this is critical that these are things that you're not going to just learn on the fly. You're not going to learn by happenstance. And it's not with regular occurrence, but we all know businesses that report positive net income and run out of cash. Like, how does that happen? What's the difference? And, you know, I think what you guys are really going to spend a lot of time talking about is arguably not the fundamentals of P&Ls and basics of financial reporting. And we're not going to talk about, I mean, if anybody in the audience is contemplating coming to Puerto Rico and they're still working with an accountant or a firm that, compiles and sends in their taxes and does pizza parlors and hair salons, we're in a different ball game here. And I think this is mission critical to someone's confidence as it relates to being able to operate the business that they're endeavoring to build, but also a certain sense of security that they're not going to run out of cash, that they have enough sitting on the sidelines for compliance reportings with their lender. But also that they're forward-looking in the decisions that they make at a strategic level. I'll also say, Scott Thorne, that while we offer fractional COO services here at Polaris for obvious reasons, one of the major misses in a lot of groups is in a fractional CFO type of a capacity. And I know you're going to probably share a lot from the stage about what that looks like in terms of even potential working relationships with clients. But if the idea for anybody in the audience is to tap their bookkeeper or office manager and bestow the title of CFO on them, I can tell you how that usually ends, and it's not very well. So I think it's a great service that you're going to be providing, and the enterprise level experience that you have brought to bear in emerging groups will be second to none. And that's going to be super cool to learn about and experience when we're all together in Puerto Rico. So aside from Aberman's desire to get out of the snow and actually find some sun and fun, are there any other aspects that you guys would like to touch on as it relates to any of the topics, subject matter, or things that you're going to be sharing from the stage for our audience who are going to join us there?
I think it's just going to be an exciting, eye-opening session. Not that exciting and accounting go hand in hand very often, but I think we're going to try to make that hour as exciting as accounting can be, and I think it's going to be eye-opening. What am I missing? I have five practices right now and I have five different P&Ls. I'm not seeing a consolidated view of my performance. Maybe you wouldn't be surprised, Perrin, about how many times you're talking to a new group and you're asking to see their financials and everything is miscategorized or has different coding or there's no consolidated view. How are you running your enterprise? It's just they need this help. They need this help to not only stay out of trouble, but thrive and keep growing into the future. And so I'm excited for the hour, and I'm pumped that Scott Thorne will be there as well. He's just such a key member of our team, and so we're really excited to spend time with you and the other guests for the event.
Well, we are thrilled to have both of you, and certainly to have Scott Thorne in tow with his background and experience is going to be wonderful. And, you know, I think for those who do come and experience what y'all are going to share with them, they're going to learn a lot more than they ever knew to ask as it relates to what seems to be a very basic and fundamental type of an application in their business. And it just isn't. And it's, you know, what they say, what got you here won't get you there. And this is really one of the pivotal shifts, much like a cash to accrual conversion. This has to be, you know, a shift in the mindset of the founder, an entrepreneur behind the business, as it relates to how much time he or she spends interpreting financial results and the confidence that they have to make decisions off of them. And that's the key thing moving forward. So I really appreciate you guys taking time out of your schedule, not just today, but in late April. I mean, being away from your work, being away from the family, and joining us there is really worth a lot. And we certainly appreciate the partnership we have with Ide Bailey. You're generous to be a sponsor, and you're very generous with your time. And can't wait to spend a couple of days with you. And if this thing really does go bad, I think your presentation is at like 9 or 10 a.m. on Friday, so we might just open the bar a couple hours early and save the day on it. All right, you know, have like three martinis going into the morning break, and we'll be good to go. Right,
Bloody Mary's on me.
There it is. Scott Aberman, Scott Thorne, Ide Bailey, thank you all so much. Thank you both so much, and to those in your firm for being great partners of ours. Can't wait to be with you in another probably less than 2 months now. Appreciate the time today, guys.
Thanks, Perrin.
You bet. And thank you all for being in the audience and being a listener and a subscriber. We certainly appreciate your ears as it relates to the subject matter that we share, as well as that of our partners. Can't wait to see a good number of you in Puerto Rico for the Accelerate 2024 conference, April 24th through 26th. Registration is open, and I'll link to it in the show notes. See you on the next episode, everybody.